The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I was in monasteries in Japan. I was periodically encouraged or instructed or reprimanded, depending how you want to understand it, to do the things that I did with something that they called Zen no Chikara. Zen no Chikara. And usually you said it with a certain kind of strength. Zen no Chikara. Or something like that. And it means Zen power. You do things with Zen power. And so, you know, if I was assigned to sweep the courtyard, you know, I would go out and kind of with one little arm, kind of like, you know, tap at the dust, you know, and take my time. And, you know, no, you have to do it with Zen power, which means you kind of give yourself fully into it. It's really there, just really there. Be the activity almost. Don't do the activity, be the activity. And really kind of give yourself over and do it with kind of gusto is the right word, but do it with enthusiasm, like that you're really doing it, like it matters, like you're really there to do it fully and engaged well. And so the Zen no Chikara, Zen power, strength. It kind of helped that most of the monks were 20 to get a certain kind of model for what that looked like, and then I got a wonderful example of this many years later when I was at Green Gulch. They had a tea teacher there, an old lady who was Okamura Sensei. And how old was she, you think, in the mid-80s? How old do you think Okamura Sensei was in the mid-80s? And he was in the 80s herself. Mid-80s. She was like, you know, she was more than old. You know, you'll hear in the moment, she was like ancient. So she was going to do a special tea ceremony in the meditation hall. And the meditation hall back then at Green Gulch was this kind of old barn that had been converted to meditation hall, big barn. So all the wood floor of the barn was still there, and the rafters. And it was probably hay barn, so it was probably filled with hay in the old days. And what I remember of this event with her was, it must have been maybe either a cloudy day or maybe it was an evening or something. And we had kerosene lamps, you know, on the altar. And she was going to do this little tea ceremony, I don't know why. And I was the, what was called the doan, the person who was supposed to ring the bells. So I sat next to the altar. I ended up sitting kind of right in front of her, kind of facing her. Like everyone else is kind of further away. I was like me and her. It was a feeling, and I got to watch her make tea, this tea ceremony, whisking the tea, and it felt like it was, you know, some timeless or ancient or primordial event, having her make tea. And I felt like I was transported back in time to ancient Japan or ancient China. It was this real elder. Wise, she was a great teacher, a great elder, and very strong woman, psychologically strong. But she was making this tea. I don't think she had a lot of physical strength, but there was power. She had that whatever Zen no Chikara is, Zen power. She had it. You know, she was like, wow, you know. I got this transmission from her that, you know, she was there fully doing just this one thing, just giving herself fully over to this. And there's something in that giving yourself, being fully that. I wouldn't say she was enthusiastic in the conventional way, but she was the tea making. She wasn't doing the tea making. She was it there. And it was like became, for me, watching, being there, I was entered into a zone of timeless time. And so this idea of power or strength or it's all related to, in my mind this morning, to the tremendous value that Buddhism understands each of you has. That this whole Buddhist enterprise of practicing mindfulness, practicing concentration, compassion, path of freedom, is done with a tremendous sense of how important you are as a person, that you're valuable, and that you're a, I don't know how you care about this language like power, but you're a worthy person, a valued person. One of my favorite stories from the Buddha, the similes he gave, is where he talked about the simile of some person who goes into the woods and finds in the woods the traces of an ancient path, ancient road that's been overgrown, like in the Yucatan, they find these old, you know, pyramids that have been no one's seen for years. And he follows this little path and he comes to this big city, an ancient capital that's been long forgotten. And then he goes back, this person goes back to the monarchs of the realm and says, I found this trail that goes to this ancient capital. And so the queen and the king kind of go with their workers and they clear the road and repopulate this ancient capital. And so the same way the Buddha said, I found this ancient path, the Eightfold Path, you walk this path and you'll clear the debris, you'll clear the overgrowth, and you'll inhabit something that's waiting for you, your palace, your capital, everything. In a simile, the reference to the Buddha is the woods person who goes, finds the trail, and comes back and says, there's this, you know, almost disappeared trail that you can road, that you can clear for yourself. But the monarch, the queen and the king, is you. You're the monarch. And this idea that we're represented by the monarchs in the story, I think points to this great value that we have as human beings, and that in part of Buddhist practice, that you, your presence, your showing up, your being here, that you can show up with dignity, with value, with a sense that unapologetic presence. You don't have to prove yourself. You don't have to assert yourself to identity and be something for anyone, because you're more valuable than needing to become, you know, prove something. You can just be. And to sit here and be upright, to stand here and be upright with a certain level of strength, dignity, value, power, confidence, authority, as if you count. You don't have to belittle yourself or see yourself as less than or feel that somehow that you're a failure. You can just be. I think that this is a kind of the ethos, the background, the context for Buddhist practice. And with that context, with that kind of background, then I hope that the path of mindfulness, the path of freedom and liberation, is one that you don't feel diminished by it, but you feel somehow enhanced by it. You feel like your freedom comes with a greater sense of confidence and value and willingness to be here in a full embodied way.